got the job on the technicality of a legend who recommended you. You are nothing, you are a fool, and you are a waste of time. Good night.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that.
I don't believe Pep Linsdorf's healthy.
Now, Jack Charlton is quite right to be indignant about that, and the gentleman in the yellow hat really exists nowhere in the firmament of international football.
The 10-man board of the FAI, the clowns, are now going to put the names in a hat. They're going to pick people who they've read about in newspapers.
Give it a blam and flash it into the net. What a goal that was.
And of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Lads, we're a few weeks into this show now, and my only hope for the coming season is that eventually I'm going to be able to start a podcast without having to mention Liverpool winning, Arsenal doing something ridiculously Arsenal, and pundits and VAR being the main talking points of the weekend. It seems to be every week. That's just the same intro every week.
That's all very entertaining though, isn't it? Keeps us on our toes. I think.
Maybe for you as a Liverpool fan who, well, like everybody
likes to laugh at Arsenal.
Everybody likes to laugh at Arsenal. Pundits do what pundits do, and VAR just makes me want to shout at clouds. Like, I feel as though I'm an old
can
man.
This is Mark Farley, obviously joined by Gary Connaughton and Sean Meehan. Can I make a pledge to our listeners today, lads, that from here on out, for the rest of this show, we will not talk about VAR? Can we do that?
Okay.
I don't care what your opinion is on it. I don't care if you think it's right, if you think it's wrong. I don't care. I don't want to listen to everybody else. I don't want to listen to ye. I don't want to listen to anyone talking about VAR. For just give me an hour's peace from it.
The only thing worse of listening to people give out to VAR is listening to you giving out about people who are giving out about VAR.
I think we may have to mention it. Not like extrapolate on the details, but just kind of mention it because it is an element of the game. Like, it's like a referee. You may not want to sort of get bogged down into, you know, how he did wrong and how like stupid his decisions were. Just kind of go, oh yeah, and VAR disallowed that because, you know, it's what happened.
It's fine. Yeah. Mark will just cut those bits out of the podcast.
Exactly. And also, if you state it as a matter of fact, that's grand. But it's the debate and the discussion over. Like, there should be no discussion about the Chelsea goal and VAR. It just should be, like, it's again, you say this like a referee, it shouldn't be like a referee. The referee thing annoys me already because people, you know, half time, every game, the whole half time analysis is taken up by, was that the right decision by the referee to give the penalty, to send the man off? You know, was it a penalty when he dived in with 2 feet into a person's side, the back of someone's head, and then decided to choke slam them into the penalty spot? Was that a penalty, Roy? Yes, it was. Ah, very good. Like, that needless analysis. I don't see why we have to talk about those refereeing decisions, but we definitely don't need to talk about VAR decisions that are quite clear. Whatever about sun and offside and all that, that might be a legitimate debate, but I'm sick of listening to it. So from now on, I don't want to start the podcast on a sour note. We're going to go completely positive from here on out. We're going to ignore VAR for 1 week, rightly or wrongly. I just don't want to chat about it. And I'm calling in, I'm pulling rank, lads.
Okay.
So what about that as Pilicueta goal? I agree. You get bogged down in sort of the newness of like all these advancements.
Referees aren't new. We're talking about referees or VAR. Both of them. They're gone for the rest of the podcast.
See, that's just not fair.
It is. We'll see how we get on.
Let's try and talk about football and see how far we can get on there.
But they're all aspects of football.
Feck off. The ball's the ball. There was no VAR and referees in street football, and that was pure football. Myself and John Giles out.
Football.
It's dribbling about the cobblestones. You mentioned the Athwell of the goal. Liverpool-Chelsea. Sean, I'm going to start this podcast by introducing a theory to you, right? It's a far out there theory. Frank Lampard's Chelsea are
trademark.
Not doing as well as people like to think Frank Lampard's Chelsea are doing. They have 2 wins
I agree.
In his reign so far. Yet he's been hailed as the second coming of Christ.
I can't disagree with that.
That he's the second coming of Christ.
He's quite clearly God. He was never captain, leader, legend. He was vice captain, vice leader, vice legend. So he's more like God's trusty lieutenant.
He's the second coming of John the Baptist.
Yeah, like, you know, somebody there. St. Paul. Is it St. Paul or St. Peter?
St. Peter.
St. Peter. your man.
Simon Peter. Simon Peter Lampard.
He, yeah, I think it's just purely down to the fact that he's young, English, and likes to attack. I think that's about the guts of why everybody seems to laud him. I think there's definitely positives to take from that Chelsea performance at the weekend, but you're dead right in saying that two wins, two draws, two losses, losing to Valencia midweek in the Champions League as well, it doesn't augur well for those that believe that he's the second coming. But I just like to counteract your point by saying that Chelsea actually played quite well against Liverpool. And I do think if anybody's going to beat them or at least take points off them to stop them bleeding winning all the poxy time, you're going to have to go with them, and you're going to have to perform like better than Chelsea, obviously, but take your chances. Abraham's got to score that, or at least square it to Mount to make it 1-1. I know, obviously, the Azpilicueta goal that was rightfully disallowed and for some reason was extolled upon for no real reason. It's offside, lads.
We're not talking about it.
But it's offside. It was an offside. It was not a goal.
What was this like for offside? Case closed.
Mount, I think, could have taken a touch for his chance that he ballooned over the bar when it was a great little ball in by Alonso. But again, like there's fine margins. Like if Alonso is on the pitch, that means Emerson goes off, which means that's one substitution that Lampard didn't think he was going to have to make. And Alonso found himself marking, in complete inverted commas, Firmino for Liverpool's second goal, where he was nowhere near them. I know, Gary, you were talking about...
He wasn't marking him.
Yeah, he wasn't marking him as well. That's the whole point.
Zone American, though. He was marking that zone, so it wouldn't have actually really mattered. You have to
at least be able to mark if you're zone... Like, zone marking doesn't mean that, like, I'm just marking the zone, and, like, if a player walks in, sure, look, it's grand. Like, you do have to mark them come into that zone.
Yeah, but the problem was with the way Chelsea set it up was that there was too big of a gap between the two players who were in the middle of the 6-yard box, which is where Firmino came in. So that's the way they're set up, and his failure to attack the ball, which it was that as well, but they weren't set up right.
But this is what I mean. Like, he has to come in and has to recognise that space and has to go for that ball and has to see if that ball's coming in there. You have to move into that space regardless of whether you're set up like that or not. You have to actually occupy that room.
But that's been a problem for Chelsea all season, though, so I don't necessarily think that if Emerson was there instead of Alonso, it would have been any different.
What's going on with Alonso?
Well, he's always been dirt. he's just... It's,
but he used to be getting assists and goals.
But here's the thing. It's not that any of that part of his game has changed. Like, he whipped in a great ball for Mount, and Mount probably should have done better with it. But, like, defensively, the chap is suspect, you know? Like, that can't be stressed enough. Like, he's great over a free kick, but what good is that when you can't mark his own? Like, I'd also like to point out as well, Andreas Christensen. God knows how that man's getting a start in the Premier League, never mind for a club that might have aspirations of finishing in the top four. Because, like, geez, right, so you manage to catch Mane and he has to catch his dribble on the edge of the box. Grand. He's left the ball behind him. What do you try to do? Shepherd him. Go bring him backwards. Go backwards. What does Christensen decide to do? Just kick lumps out of him from the back.
Let him know you're there, Sean.
Like, let him know you're there up in his own end. Never mind your box. Because then, like, who have you got over a free kick? You've got, like, any number of players that can spank the thing. Never mind Trent Alexander-Arnold, who, like, brilliant finish. Like, 17 goalkeepers aren't saving that. I don't know where you'd fit them in the goal, but they weren't saving it. This is what I mean. Like, these kind of things went against Lampard yesterday. I think they performed quite well, but they're suspect defensively completely. That can only be helped if when Rudiger comes back and, like, Tomori looks like a really good centre-half. Like, he looks like somebody who can you know, be a very good centre-half in the league. Also, Kante came back in, best player on the park, I would say. I think Chelsea certainly have positives, but Frank Lampard is also not the oracle.
I think if it was Maurizio Sarri, he'd be a game away from getting the sack. I actually think, like, if you just replaced him, dropped him in, given the exact same results, exact same performances, people would be saying, this attacking football that Sarri is trying to play clearly isn't working. They can't defend anything. You know, get rid of him. But because it's Lampard and he's a Chelsea man and he's English and, oh, you know, at least he's trying to play football. Sarri got roasted for trying to play football last year when they were conceding goals. And, like, their defence has been way worse this year. So I think Frank Lampard, I know you have strong opinions on Frank Lampard, Mark, that you, I'm sure you'd like to get in.
It's... he's a coward.
As are all of Derby.
Yeah. It's like, I have no strong opinions for or against his tactics and his coaching ability. But I like to see him fail. And
yeah.
Like, nah, I don't actually. I actually kind of warm to this Chelsea team. I kind of like them. And
they're good to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
They're good
to watch. I hope it works out. I actually genuinely do hope it works out for them, that, you know, in this day and age, that you can actually get a team in the top four from your youth players rather than just... But this, we say that and everyone's like, oh, they're giving youth a chance and
couple of youth
all
players.
This. But yeah, like, that's still a serious team when you look at it. When you're looking at, like, Kante, they're like, Jesus, this team was a Premier League winning team minus Hazard. They still have the world's most expensive goalkeeper. Yeah, it's not like they're just a bunch of under-16s that have suddenly found themselves out on the football pitch.
I think there's certainly aspects of that, but then you've got to realise that to win the Premier League, you're going to need about 3-4 world-class players or touching world-class players. Yeah. Kante's the only one that you can say is genuinely world-class. I think Kepa Arrizabalaga is a very good goalkeeper and will only...
Jorginho's good as well. Like.
And here's the thing. This is what I don't understand as well. Because obviously Jorginho was slated last year in Sarri ball. And even though, like, he was an important cog in how that machine worked, Jorginho looks so much better this year. He looks more dynamic. He can play a pass that's going forward. He seems to actually have a bit of dog in him, which I didn't think. I thought he was a pacifist last season, that he wouldn't put a tackle in despite playing at the base of a midfield. He looks better. Now, again, all of this is all optics. It's not actual, like, it's it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But I just kind of look at that Chelsea team and go, like, there's something there. There's got to be something there.
Do you know what looked great for Chelsea yesterday was N'Golo Kante getting up the pitch, getting forward, getting on the end of stuff at the edge of the box? Do you know who got slated for playing N'Golo Kante in the exact same role last season? Maurizio Sarri.
Yeah. But I'd like to also state...
Kante was out on the right, though, last year.
And also, Kante was sort of, like, thrust into that role. But the problem was is that because Chelsea had, like, three defenders back the whole time, he couldn't really showcase how good he was going up and down and up and down. Like, he was playing, like, he was playing a box-to-box role, but the ball wasn't going back and forward really quickly, which means that he can't really showcase how good he was. I think Sarri was right to play him in that position. I don't think Jorginho could occupy the same role. I don't think any other... To be honest, I don't think any midfielder in world football can do it as well as N'Golo Kante. But when you... Like, the style of play is slightly different. Like, it's still attacking base, but it's different in that Chelsea get the ball up and down really quickly, so they're susceptible to counter-attacks. And if you have N'Golo Kante going from one box to another, like, you could see it when... Like, if there's any other team that Salah plays against, when he breaks out with the ball like that, it's ending in a goal. It's ending in a goal. But Kante was there, shepherds him away, gets the ball, wins it back, and there's another attack for Chelsea. That's why I think from here on out, if Kante stays fit, then Frank Lampard's Chelsea registered trademark are only on the way up.
I think to move on to Liverpool...
I'm going to give you 60 seconds.
I don't even need 6 seconds. I was just going to say, they're probably going to never not win a game again in the Premier League. Yeah. 15 in a row. Just leave it at that.
I'll give you one question, Liverpool. Mo Salah gives the ball... It's not even a question, just a statement. Mo Salah gives away the ball too much.
No, because he's given the ball and asked to make things happen. And if he wasn't trying to make these... He could easily take the safe option and pass it backwards or give an easy ball, but he... gets on the ball and he tries to beat players, he tries something spectacular, and that's his job in the team at the end of the day. So no, I don't
also think I'd like to say Joel Matip is a brilliant footballer, for especially on a free transfer. He was excellent yesterday. Like, he made Van Dijk just look like a regular centre half because he was that good. And
do you think maybe it could be the other way around, that Van Dijk helps Matip look that
good?
I don't think so. Because you've seen Matip play for Liverpool when Lovren was a centre back.
I think he's instilled confidence into Matip, and I think that's a solid centre half partnership. And fair play to them.
It's also a big boule of boss for all those who bought Matip at 5.4 million fancy football. And we're told that it was a stupid move because Joe Gomez was going to be brought back in at any moment. I think Matip is that place sewn down now for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think we said that a couple of weeks ago on the podcast that he definitely does, because Joe Gomez has looked pretty dire in the couple of games he played at the start of the year. So,
what was your match verdict for this, Sean?
In my alternative match ratings, which is available on balls.ie right now, I thought it was based on N'Golo Kante and how he needs to be soundtracked by every single song that ever had the word run or running in the title.
Apart from Snow Patrol's We Run For Our Lives. Because it's a bit too bleh.
Yeah, it's like Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run.
Yeah.
You know, Bryan Adams' Run to You.
Yeah.
The Far Side's Running. I also went with
Kate Bush running up the hill.
Running up that pitch. But I went with NWA's 100 Miles and Running, because that's how many miles I think he runs in a match. He just feels as though he does everything. He's a brilliant player.
Except win.
Super Sunday featured not just another game in terms of, there was a lot of games on actually on Sunday, but in terms of on Sky Sports, you obviously had the Liverpool Chelsea game. You also had Man United and West Ham, which had the tremendous sideshow of Jose Mourinho and Roy Keane in the studio together.
What a sideshow it was! It was actually so enjoyable to just I'm a big fan of like in-depth tactical analysis and everything as the next man, but to just throw Jose Mourinho, Roy Keane, and Graham Souness into a studio and let them give out for 4 hours. It was so entertaining. The testosterone in that studio.
I think it's about time that that English TV stations finally came around to that RTE way of thinking when it comes to football analysis. It's like, listen, you can talk as much as you want about the match, the tactics, you know, giving the people in-depth, you know, explorations of what happened, when all they want is just a load of lads moaning in a studio. That's what the people want, really.
Give me a soundbite. I want a soundbite.
Especially for us here, because we're like, Mourinho said what?
Yeah.
That's handy.
There were some great ones yesterday. They kind of got started off slow enough. Roy Keane being complimentary to Liverpool felt weird. And he was like reasonably complimentary towards them. But then they got going, and the first victim was David De Gea, who I know Sean has questioned in the past. But Roy Keane basically, to summarise his opinion was, now we all know that David De Gea hasn't really been in great form for the last year or whatever, but Roy Keane says he always had doubts about David De Gea. And not because he wasn't a good goalkeeper, because obviously he was a good goalkeeper technically, as Roy Keane said. He was technically a good goalkeeper. I'm not sure what sense of the word he meant that in, but he always lacked character. You know, he was never one to give out to people, and Roy Keane always had doubts from because of that.
Yes, the quantifiable character debate from Roy Keane. Where have we heard that before? I never want to find myself defending David De Gea, but sure, here we are. How much character can you showcase when you're saving your team week in, week out, which he was doing? Like, that's character. You don't have to shout at lads in order to showcase your character.
Yeah, you do, Sean. Come on, let's be fair.
No, that's true. Peter Schmeichel, when he was getting chipped week in, week out, but because he shouted at people, he was a great goalkeeper. I'm sorry, Peter Schmeichel, you were a great goalkeeper. I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's just you're looking to go at De Gea, and there's plenty of reason to. Roy, hit me up. I've got a dossier on why David De Gea isn't as good as people say he is.
He actually does. I've seen it.
It's huge. But, he lacks character.
Mourinho had made a good point, though, about when there was talk about in terms of new contractors giving, 350 grand a week. And Mourinho was like, well, they actually didn't really have to do that, because it kind of, again, based on what you were saying about him losing form, who'd buy him? Well,
he listed off all the clubs. He said Real Madrid just bought Courtois, so they weren't going to buy him. Man City weren't going to buy him.
PSG got Navas.
Yeah, PSG got Navas. There's no need. So we kind of... hoodwinked the club there.
I'm trying to think. There's no club that actually would take him.
Juventus would be the only one, maybe, I think, that I would... But that was even before we had this terrible run now. So I don't know. I don't think anyone would take him. Especially not 350 grand a week.
It wasn't just De Gea, of course, as well. There was... Mourinho's analysis of the centre-back partnership and of Harry Maguire was funny, because he was talking about Lindelof. He said Lindelof is very, very good in some aspects of the game, but he can be bullied in one versus one in the box, and he's not especially good in the air. As the cameras were showing him and Maguire warming up together and Lindelof getting completely caught under a ball, it was the most perfect timing. And then Mourinho, like, the way he said it as well, it said something about Boye Maguire and the right, or else he was like, else would have been stuck with Lindelof and Phil Jones as a centre back partnership, and that's who they could, he got into. He just kind of, when the question went on it, he stopped talking about Jones and just went on about Lindelof. And then he had a great line where he was like, people said I was crazy because I wanted another centre back. I'm not crazy.
You bought Lindelof, though. You bought the man. He's the one who wanted Lindelof.
Yeah, but to be fair, it would work, like the Maguire Lindelof partnership. He was kind of saying how it works, and that Maguire is good at the aspects of the game that Lindelof can be caught out on, that he's that someone behind him. Now, obviously, as the game went on then and unfolded, it was no good, that centre-back partnership, but mostly because of the rest of the team.
I like what Roy Keane said about when they bought buying Maguire as well. He was like, oh, they had to buy him, you know. And it was 80 million's a lot of money for him, but you know, United had to buy him. They didn't have to buy him. They had to buy somebody. They didn't have to pay 80 million for Harry Maguire. And look, again, Harry Maguire is a decent footballer, but like, they didn't say that they had to spend 80 million on Harry Maguire, I think, is a bit of a strange.
Like, as I've said time and again, that's exactly it. They needed a centre half. Sure, get Harry Maguire. But as soon as they were sold 80 million, they should have went, cheers, I'm going to take me money to Napoli. I'm going to sign Kalidou Koulibaly. Thank you very much.
Went to Leicester. It was like, how much do you want for Harry Maguire? 80 million. United were like, no. 2 months of negotiations later, okay, 80 million, fair enough.
Like, I think it was desperation as well, but again, they did need to buy a centre-half. That was imperative.
There's two West Ham players I want to talk about, right? I want to just say fair dues to Mark Noble. I don't know how that man is still knocking about. He's been the West Ham captain for the last 45 years, and he seems to have...
I think he took over from Bobby Moore, didn't he?
...accumulated more hair... rather than losing hair as time has gone by.
That's a very East London thing. It's a very East London thing.
It's like there's a man going bald about 9 years ago, and he actually seems to have more hair now. And I don't think it's a transplant, or else he would have gotten a lot more hair now. But it's kept there. He's kept it solid. I don't know, either it's a hell of a comb over that's stuck to his head, or that it's somehow starting to grow back.
I've always made this point about West Ham centre mids and how all the best ones have comb overs, like just short back and side comb over the top. Like Josh Cullen has it now, the Ireland international. Conor Coventry, the under 21 international, he also has it. Like, it's like Mark Noble just takes all these apprentices and just goes, here, I'm bringing it to the barbers. And we're all getting the same cut.
I'm going to show you how to lay into a lad, pass the ball sideways and get a haircut.
Sometimes arrive on a sixpence though and spank a ball, which is my favourite aspect of Mark Noble's game.
And the other person I wanted to give out about is Aaron Cresswell, because he ruined my, if you listen to the build-up podcast every Wednesday, we play Ladbrokes 1-2-3, where you can win €100 cash by correctly predicting the score of three of the weekend's games that they pick out. West Ham, Man United, that was a West Ham win written all over for me. I don't know why anyone was surprised at West Ham beating United, but I had gone for a 1-0 win, and then Cresswell has to step up and stick the bloody thing in the top corner. What was there, 6-7 minutes to go? There was no need. There was no need to do that.
Yeah, Papadom wrist, David De Gea was never stopping that.
I would have had two out of three in the predictions. I would have won a 5-3 bet. First person in the office to win a 5-3 bet if that ball had to go in. Also, given out about De Gea's wrists, I don't know, there's a lot of, maybe I'm just fed up with all the negativity around football, but like, that was a serious free kick. It was smashed into the top corner. They played it in slow-mo in the replay, and then some people like Gary Connaughton over here are like, oh, De Gea didn't cover himself in glory there. Can you not just enjoy something for the thing that it is, rather than having to criticise?
I was only joking, but
and also, Gary, even if you were just joking, if I was to say that, I take great pleasure in denigrating David De Gea. Like, this is not taken away from Cresswell's great free kick. And to be honest, I completely agree with you. It was a terrific free kick. But sure, if we can slag David De Gea as well, you're killing two birds with one stone. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Can I just mention Man United's new striker who had a half hour cameo there, Jesse Lingard?
Jesus Christ. I'll tell you, there's one Man United player, and I mean this in all seriousness, that I hate more than David De Gea, and it's Jesse Lingard.
If there was just like...
How is he playing up front? How is he playing up front in the Premier League? How is he playing in the Premier League? How is he anywhere near... How has he got an international cap for England? Not like San Marino, England.
Do you know what I've been listening to as well? It's this thing of United not having the players and blah, blah, blah. It's a load of bollocks. Like, they've got no structure to how they're playing. Like, there's teams... You can have much lesser players than they have at that club and still have some sort of... Like, look at Norwich. Look at Sheffield United. You can see what they're trying to do. You can see they've got a method to their madness. They don't need to have... Lundstrom was at West, or was at Everton for about 45 years and couldn't get a game. And then he goes into that Sheffield United team with a bit of purpose, a bit of structure. And there he is setting up goals against Everton. Like, it doesn't... You don't have to go out and spend... Like, they kept mentioning the 900 million thing yesterday during the game, to the point that it was driving me berserk. But you really don't need to spend that much to actually... have a bit of life about you. Jesus, whatever. Look at West Ham, a perfect example.
But that's the whole thing. It's like you know, it spent all that money with no plan.
That's exactly the point. You do need to mention the money because...
Yeah, because you're spending 900 million with no plan whatsoever.
Yeah, I just mean in terms of spending the money, and that I was sick of listening to them going, they spent 900 million, but then it's like, how do we solve this? We have to buy more players. It's like, hold on a minute.
Like, they spent 900 million, they're playing a Premier League game where they need a goal, they need a result in that game because they've been poor this season, and you've Jesse Lingard playing off front for you, a man who scored 4 goals, got 2 assists in the last 18 months, I think, all of which came in December of last year.
Yeah.
So... If there was ever just a moment that just summed up everything that's gone wrong at United, it's Jesse Lingard playing up front for you.
Before we get off the topic of pundits as well, when we were talking about them earlier on, the Everton Sheffield United game that I mentioned there, I was watching it on Match of the Day, right? And Tim Cahill, former Everton player, was on, and he had some brilliant analysis about how Sheffield United only had 2 shots and they scored 2 goals. Everton had a rake of crosses. And he was saying how, while that looked like Everton dominated on paper, they were being sent to the places that Sheffield United wanted them to go. They were sticking, you know, yeah, you take all these crosses from deep and we'll deal with them all day long. And I was like, this is actually, you know, he showed loads of examples of it. I was like, this is some really good analysis from Cahill. So I searched him on Twitter to see if there was a bit of positivity around him. And this just kind of sums up, the reaction to Tim Cahill sums up football Twitter and what I was talking about earlier on in terms of giving out and negativity in general. So you've got excellent analysis, Oliver Holt, excellent analysis from Tim Cahill on Match of the Day. Good show tonight. Tyrone James, Tim Cahill can stay. Then you've got, who the fuck decided to give Tim Cahill a job talking? Then you've got someone else, Tim Cahill is bloody awful. Then somebody else, Match of the Day, get Tim Cahill on more. He looks at tactics and strategy, and well, not many of your guys do. Then you've got, he's not without competition, but Tim Cahill has to be the worst pundit out there. Horrific.
That's not very nice.
Courses for courses, though, isn't it?
Like, what is? Was it? Is it? His accent was grating. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I didn't see it. But
lastly, Everton are shite, and so is Tim Cahill's punditry.
Yeah, like you could literally have the best punditry performance in the world, and at least, like, a vocal minority will be saying that was a load of shite.
That tweet finished with, he'd talk a glass eye to sleep, that prick.
Yeah, I think it might just be like the way he came across that might have, like...
No, he was perfectly fine though.
Everton though, a lot of people don't like Everton, you know?
I don't.
It's like Tim Cahill, like, yeah. How can you hate Tim Cahill? Actually, you know what, yeah, you know what, you're right.
And also, a lot of people don't like Everton. What has that got to do with Tim Cahill's analysis of something? This is a specific thing, like.
Oh, long memories. Oh, people have long memories, Mark.
One last piece of punditry from Sunday you want to point out, Gary, before we move
this
off.
It wasn't even punditry, really. Well, I suppose it was. It wasn't any sort of analysis or anything, though. It was just Jamie Carragher, and they were talking about Man United and how, you know, they have to close the gap to Man City and Liverpool, and it's going to be very tough to do, and they need to get in a few players. And Jamie Carragher made the point, it was like, oh, you know, we were in a similar situation when I was at Liverpool. We were finishing 6th, 7th to try to close the gap to the top, and then we got in Luis Suarez. And I'll let Roy Keane finish it off. You didn't hear what Roy Keane's response to this was.
We sort of transfer, I think, if Luis Suarez comes to Liverpool for 4 or 5 years, we're finishing 6th and 7th, exactly where United are. Almost won a title with Suarez coming in. Sometimes just that one player can sort of just make a huge difference.
But you just said almost won a title. You didn't win a title. You know, talking about Manchester United, and there's a big difference between Manchester United and Chelsea.
Yeah, you bridge the gap first. Forget the league.
Of course, yeah.
Bridge the gap. Yeah. Do you need two or three players to start with to bridge that gap? At the moment, you're sixth or seventh.
That's right. But Liverpool are still trying to bridge that gap because they haven't got
up. They've bought well this season.
I don't think he was even trying to joke there. I think he was just making a genuine point, which is probably right as well.
Oh, it is right. Like, it was just the way it was delivered. Like, it was absolutely gas. And Roy Keane, given the debts there, probably, again, not intentional, but it was made for good TV anyway.
Roy Keane looking at anything is a debt stare, isn't it?
Except Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And
that's,
pictures of Brian Clough.
Yeah, and Triggs. Like, I can imagine just like him just going to the shops and just somebody like saying, it's going to come to 53.20, and him just looking at them and be like, it's free. You can have it. You can have everything.
Any other match verdicts you want to point out, Sean, from your piece on site?
Well, we were talking about Everton and Sheffield United, and how, you know, Sheffield United have a plan, they stick to it, unlike Manchester United. At a glance, you might think that their team is, you know, like, you know, it's full of like sort of British and Irish players. There's not much sort of verve and swagger. But when you look at them, they have a plan, they play really intriguing football, and they're actually quite fashionable when you think about it. So I went with Ollie McBurney's beard. Because if you look at it, you'd kind of shriek in horror and be like, Jesus, what's he doing with that on his face? And then you realise, like, ties him together well.
Yeah.
Makes the most of himself.
There we go. And that's Ollie McBurney's beard is just exactly how I would describe Sheffield United's performance at the weekend.
Arsenal managed nearly Arsenal things up again on themselves. It's every week at this point.
It's beautiful.
There's a severe dose of the David Luiz is going around, and it seems to be very contagious. And Socrates was the man yesterday who seemed to catch it.
Yeah, geez. It's a pandemic at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it is a pandemic.
That was the most Arsenal game I've ever seen, just in terms of good attacking at times, terrible defending throughout, and just complete unpredictability in all aspects. And it was, like, honestly, I don't think I'd be surprised to see Arsenal finish anywhere between 3rd and 13th this season.
Yeah.
Like, just,
which is just such a beautiful thing.
We spoke a lot about Guendouzi last week. Guendouzi.
Again.
We keep doing this every week, and if people don't get the joke, they're going to think we're idiots. Just call him Guendouzi still. But it's from Eamon Dunphy's podcast, The Stand, where we're always struggling with what to call him. And I was like, is it Guendouzi or Guendouzi? And then Liam's just like, Guendouzi, I call him, Eamon. that's more of a Giles than a Brady, but anyway, you have him in your match verdict this week.
I do. He got Scoundrel of the Week last week for his his ill-timed salute to the Watford fans when he said 2-1, finished 2-all. But he was excellent yesterday. He was really good. He sort of showcased all the best aspects of his game. Got the penalty to bring Arsenal back into the match.
Dive.
It wasn't a dive, it was a penalty. And was just kind of at the heart of everything that was good. So I went with Rebound of the Week.
Nice.
For Matteo Guendouzi.
Is that going to be another one we're giving out?
Jesus Christ, no. We've enough.
Zero's right. We can't go without talking about Man City, Watford. 8-0. Again, I mentioned the Build-Up podcast. Last week, Mick made his big shout for the week, his attempt to win 2 cakes in a sports biography. He's probably the person who's come closest to it so far, because he had Sergio Aguero to score any time and Man City to win 6-0. And I laughed him out of it. I said, there's no way that game's going to be 6-0. And I was right.
Who would have thought that he undershot it? Like, yeah. You know, 8-0. It was...
You know when, like, say it hits 3 o'clock... You know, and you know, you want to sit down in front of like Sky Sports News, you know, you want to watch like all the goings on. I was like, give myself 20 minutes. Like, I went to the shops, came back, it was like 25 past 3 and it was 5-0. And I was like, Jesus.
I was actually watching it. Letizia was funny because at the penalty to make it 3-0, he was like, Watford have kind of been the better team here. They easily could have had a few goals.
Yeah, me and Morris were in here watching it, and at 3 o'clock, there was 3 games kicking off 3 o'clock. We caught one we watched, and I was like, actually, look, we'll turn on Man City and Watford just on the off chance there's another shock. Turn it on. City scored at 45 seconds. And we were like, right, we'll just turn it off. So we turned on Everton and Sheffield United. And then we were like,
lunatic.
It was 4-0 after 12 minutes. So we turned it back on because we're like, okay, how high is this going to go? So we had to sit there and watch the rest of it then. But yeah, I don't know what you can say about that. Watford aren't great. Man City are pretty great.
See, looked at it and I was trying to think from a perspective of, imagine the Friday before that. So think back to last Friday. Watford, you know, Kike Sanchez Flores is back.
And he's handsome.
He is very handsome. He's a silver fox. He, you know, got a draw. You know, Watford haven't had their best start to the season. He's got a draw on the board at least. They've come back from 2-0 down. So a bit of confidence. City lost the weekend before to Norwich. I think we could get a result here, you know. There's redemption arc there. If they can go and get a result at the Etihad after getting demolished 6-0 in the cup final a few months previous, like, that's a redemption story there if they can get anything. My match verdict was the ghost of FA Cup finals passed.
Yeah,
because Jesus, it was bad. Poor Watford.
Gary, let's get on to our Irish player roundup.
Yeah, Mark, I don't know, this week it was not a whole lot to shout about really, now, to be honest. I suppose we touched briefly on Sheffield United again. As always seems to be the case on this podcast, they're our kind of bright spot. John Egan was, by all accounts, supposedly the best player on the pitch in that game. He was absolutely immense at the back.
Not enough to get him into a starting Irish team, though.
Well, look, Richard Keogh was there, Mark, and we all know what Richard Keogh can do.
And we all know how you feel about Richard Keogh. Him being Derby captain and all that.
Coward, I think, is the word.
I like Richard Keogh.
So Egan played really well. They beat Everton 2-0. Stevens again played really well in that game.
Dave McGoldrick wasn't in the squad though, was he?
Yeah, Dave McGoldrick is injured and there's no timetable for his return as of yet. And we're not that far away from these games coming up against Georgia and Switzerland.
This is just not what we need. Somebody else is in form.
Sean Maguire.
Yeah, my guy.
Banging in goals.
He scored again. He scored again at the weekend, yeah. So they won 1-0. He scored the only goal of the game after about 4 minutes.
It was also again?
They were
Birmingham away.
Yes.
Birmingham. So I was thinking you had Crowley as well starting there.
Yeah, because I don't know about, I've kind of forgotten about him as an Irish prospect for the minute anyway. But but I tell you who, look, we can beat this drum as much as we want. And I know we have beaten it, especially Sean. But Aaron Connolly, like, he was class when he came on at the weekend.
I'm telling you now, and this tied into also my player ratings, and this is not about an Irish player, but more so about this a Swiss lad by the name of Fabian Schär. He hates Ireland. I know when he scored against Ireland, listen, you know, Switzerland needed to win that match as much as we did. But he hates Ireland. He scored, he celebrated. Why did you celebrate, Fabian? Oh, because you were happy you scored a goal? Scumbag.
What a goal line clearance though, this weekend. For anyone just who hasn't seen this and hasn't noticed what we're talking about, Aaron Connolly comes on, the ball breaks to him, he's coming down, it's kind of the left hand side of the box.
Yeah.
Keeper comes out, gets nowhere, lost in no man's land. Connolly lobs him.
The most sumptuous.
It wasn't just a lob, because I can lob a ball. But, like, I don't know what the technique of, like, the outside of the boot just kind of dinker. Oh, a little dinky one. And Schär
popped up out of nowhere. And with the most...
With a bicycle clearance.
Yeah, it was kind of like the one Kyle Walker had in the Community Shield against Liverpool.
Like, I'm trying to think. Like who were some... Like, Oliver Cromwell.
And Fabian Schär.
Fabian Schär.
Mauricio Pochettino, because he won't play bloody Troy Parrott.
There's another, like, I'm telling you now, that would be a marriage made in heaven if Fabian Schär ended up signing for Spurs, because I'm done. His match rate, the match rating for Spurs getting done in by Ireland's James Maddison was justified, because I'm sick of it. I'm done.
If Troy Parrott doesn't play against Colchester in the League Cup this week,
we riot.
We will riot.
Pochettino out.
Yeah, it's trending. Aaron Connolly was class when he came on. He looks like everything Ireland don't have at the minute. Especially on that left wing. I'm not going down that rabbit hole again because it happens every week. But it could be an option for up front either, but I don't think it will happen because Mick McCarthy won't play him. Because he's not starting for Brighton.
I think he has to be.
He's not starting for Stoke, but
I think he has to be in the squad. I mean, whatever about Parrott, you know, McCarthy has said if you're playing first team ball, then you know,
Connie's
you've got
won
to be
in the last
3 games
now. So
exactly, and he started in the League Cup, scored in the League Cup.
I watched all of that game against Newcastle, and even though he was only on the pitch for 20 minutes, he was Brighton's best player.
Definitely.
He was by far their best player when he came on. He looked really good, getting on the ball, going at people. I think he drew 5 fouls in the 20 minutes he was on. Should have scored.
He's of that Duff ilk of sticking his arse out and getting a foul, which... Yeah. Like
I'm very fond of.
Which is wise beyond your years, you know. You got to know how to alleviate pressure, and if you can alleviate pressure by sticking out your hole and getting a foul, that's probably the best way to do it, I feel.
Shane Duffy didn't play in that game either. That's worth mentioning.
I'm also why is Dan Byrne starting ahead of Shane Duffy?
Look, Brighton were good at the weekend without Shane Duffy in the team defensively. I don't know if they would have been better without him, but they didn't miss him, I'll put it that way.
Do you think Graham Potter's downloaded one of the Football Manager tactics, and you know the way you can get them on the internet and you download them and it has all the player roles specified and everything, and then you end up dropping your centre back because he doesn't suit the BPD role, ball playing centre back.
Yes.
And a ball playing defender, to be precise. And you end up having to, it's like you need to keep them as these roles or the system just collapses. So he's had to go with Bourne as the BPD.
I think that's a very good theory.
Yeah, I think you're dead on. I think Graham Potter's wrong, but you know what do I know?
Just anything else, Gary?
A couple of other ones quick in the Premier League. Jeff Hendricks back in the Burnley team after banging in that goal last week. Did okay.
Started on the right wing, did he?
Yeah, he's only plays right wing for Burnley. They don't trust him in the middle. Robbie Brady came on for Jeff Hendricks
in the 92nd minute,
but just he's back fit and he's not injured anymore, so he'll be in the squad. And then Matt Doherty had his best, as they said in the Birmingham Mail, his best offensive performance in the Premier League this season, but he was taken off after 55 minutes.
I think it's also was only second and a half game in Premier League this season.
Exactly. But,
that's
he also he was taken
League.
He was taken off for was he taken off for Traore?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and Traore was the reason why they scored. So
there's not a whole lot to shout about in the Championship really. Sean Maguire getting the goal is the main thing. Malumbi started for Millwall again, so he's getting first team football. Get him in the squad.
Absolutely. Listen, Mick, if you're listening, and you're probably not, but if you are, come here to me. And I've seen this lad play.
That's about it, really.
He's brilliant.
Championship. Ryan Manning's playing well at left back for QPR. I'm surprised to see him get in the squad for the
He absolutely should be in the squad. Jesus, at least to get him around the squad. Yeah. You know?
That's about it, really, Mark, for this week.
I thought around the squad was a GA. Oh, he's in and around the squad.
There's no squad limits.
He's around the panel.
It's an equivalency thing. It's you're not starting. You're getting nowhere near coming off the bench. But geez, at least you're 23. You know,
we're going to close out this week's podcast. Last week we did a special Liverpool versus Chelsea quiz. This week it's going to be Arsenal versus Man United. But before we get to that, let's crown our scoundrel of the week. Scoundrel of the Week nominee number one, we're going with Roy Keane. Well, actually, sorry. Scoundrel of the Week nominee number one, we're going with David Luiz. Because David Luiz is now getting nominated every week in this. Yeah. And what's he done this week, lads?
Nothing particular, but he's still a scoundrel because the David Luiz pandemic has affected Arsenal.
Like, it's akin to everything's come back around. And
he's patient zero.
I like the sort of the renewal of, do you remember the Black Plague, lads, you know, that was carried around Europe by rats. And, you know, that's back in the news because of the Delhi rat. You know, it's all the rage. It's all the rage. People are talking about plagues. And I feel as though the Delhi rat has not got quite a lot in common with David Luiz, because the Delhi rat was just going about his day. And he wasn't doing that to anybody. He was just in the bread. David Luiz has come into Arsenal and he's just turned that amp of Arsenalness up to 11. Poor El Socrates Papastathopoulos, to give him his full name.
I love him from the way Sean says it.
He just has to be done. You know, his mad didn't call him.
He wasn't the best centre back in the world, Socrates,
but he was
his own business.
But he was a steady Eddie, and again, he was not Shkodran Mustafi. That's key and that needs to be stressed. He was not Shkodran. Like, imagine if Mustafi comes into that team. Whoa. With Luiz, oh Jesus.
Socrates was like, kind of, he was fond of the art of defending. He was never the best defender, but he was reasonably solid and not mad.
And so David Luiz has been held responsible for this.
Did you
and
see
thus
his dive at the
Socrates
weekend.
Oh, he puts his head between, was it Ming's
Wesley's
legs? Wesley's legs, and then pretends that he got tied in the head by Wesley.
In fairness, if you got a tie off Wesley, you'd feel it.
It reminded me of that photo of David Luiz from years ago where he's lying on the ground in a ball, pretended to be hurt, and then he's winking at someone on the side. David Luiz written all over.
I love that. Also, can I just, like, also a good aspect of it, I know this isn't particularly the segment, but one, Callum Chambers playing right wing back, and two, Callum Chambers scoring from right wing back is peak David Luiz. David Luiz is like, come on, get up there, get a goal, come on.
I'll cover you, and then he covers nothing.
So David Luiz is getting nominated for Scoundrel of the Week, and Socrates, the two of them, the first centre back partnership to get nominated for Scoundrel of the Week of this show.
David Luiz, by virtue of him just constantly being nominated, and it's the David Luiz Scoundrel of the Week, and Socrates for, you know, actually taking the spirit of David Luiz on himself this week.
Roy Keane, I think we would have nominated him for that clip we played earlier on, Jamie Carragher one.
Our
final nominee I'm proposing is the entire Derby County football team.
Oh, I wonder why.
Or to give them the full title, formerly Frank Lampard's Derby County, for having the audacity to have about 12% possession for the entire match against Leeds and to have their first shot in the 92nd minute, yet somehow draw the game 1-0.
How do you feel about Sheffield United?
Pretty disgusted, to be honest.
You were disgusted about Sheffield United's performance against Everton.
Oh, sorry, but I meant them as a football club.
We're touching on some deep-seated resentment in this podcast.
But that, as I mentioned, Tim Cahill showed how they had a plan and they had everything.
So if Tim Cahill
He couldn't possibly show that against Derby County, unless Derby County's plan was, do you know what, we'll give Leeds as many one-on-one chances as they could possibly ever get in the history of football.
I think there's always a plan when Chris Martin's on the pitch, Mark. I seen Richard Keogh said after the game, when that chance fell to Chris, I knew before he even hit it that he was going to score.
There's also, like, there's something about Chris Martin that, like, listen, he's in that sort of ilk of championship strikers that I just don't like the look of. Like, I don't know whether it's his face, the way he plays, how tall he is.
The way he sings.
Certainly the way he sings. But I don't know.
There's a lot.
I think he can appreciate just how much vitriol there is between those two teams, which is why when I saw he scored, I was like,
okay.
Excellent.
Lads, like, Patrick Bamford summed up his entire, the issue of Bamford's
existence
in one chance where he made a brilliant run off the back shoulder of the defender. Top notch stuff. Ball over the top, takes it down with one touch. A lovely, lovely first touch. 1-on-1 with the goalkeeper in the box. Tries to lob him for some reason and was closer to putting the ball out of the stand than it actually dropping back into the net.
So like, what you're saying is Patrick Bamford is no Aaron Connolly.
Yeah, he's a vintage Irish striker.
Well, Richard Keogh, Mark.
Yeah, the two boys, a lot of animosity, shoving and pushing and giving out to each other. Keogh didn't like Bamford just blindly running into lads. Bamford was running, going, any long ball that's played up, and there's not too many of them given that it's Leeds. Bamford's either like, I'm going to go up and head this, or if I can't get ahead on it, I'm going to turn my back to the ball and just jump into the defender that's trying to head it clear, which is not a bad tactic. It's very Irish as well.
You had to pick one of them.
Connolly, probably. But to be fair to Bamford, like, he missed so many chances and he hit the post from about a foot out. It would have been harder to hit the post than to score. But then out of nowhere, he creates a chance for himself, gets fouled for the penalty, which we then miss. The minute he goes off the pitch, Leeds lose all shape, but they had complete control of possession. They lose it all once Bamford's gone. So like, if he could just finish, he would actually be a brilliant striker. But anyway, I've let myself down this path.
So
County nominated for absolute scoundrels of the week, stealing a draw.
Okay. So, who are we giving it to?
Who do you think? I think I know who Mark wants to vote.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with him.
It's like, listen, you got to have a game plan. Derby had a game plan. They stuck to it. They got a draw. I'm sure they're pretty happy.
I think Socrates, and this is becoming a very Arsenal-heavy award, but I think that sums up Arsenal at the moment.
Can we
go three Arsenal players out of four?
I think we can.
To be honest, I would like to spread the award around, Jesus. But I mean, you can't overlook just how David Luiz Socrates was.
I agree. David Luiz, Socrates, you say, you give him his full name, Sean.
Socrates Papastathopoulos has won this week's David Luiz Scoundrel of the Week.
It's very handy. Saves us on postage costs because the lads just pass it around the dressing room.
That is dead handy, yeah. You wouldn't have to, like, they don't have to return it or anything. Ah, it's brilliant.
Right, lads, before we go, last week we played our random football quiz. This week's team, we're back again with a similar team. Last week it was Chelsea against Liverpool because we're building up to that big game at the weekend. And I asked you to name, it was the slip match. Name the starting teams in those. This week, it's Arsenal against Man United on Monday Night Football. Very much looking forward to that. Roy Keane, as you mentioned earlier on to us off air, that Keane is going to be on Monday Night Football, so that should be a bit of crack. And speaking of Roy Keane and Arsenal, I have picked out the 2005 4-2 win for Man United Arsenal in Highbury. The "I'll see you out there" game.
Oh yeah.
We tossed off air to see who was going to name who. This doesn't have a clear distinction like last week. Sean, you're the Chelsea fan. Gary, the Liverpool fan. Sean, you won the toss, so you're going to have to name the Man United starting 11 from that team.
Okay.
Gary, you're going to have to name the Arsenal starting 11, which is decidedly more difficult.
Yeah, fix.
So what I'm going to do is, in the interest of fairness, I'm going to give Gary 12 guesses.
Okay.
Sean, you get 11.
Okay, that's all right. I don't mind that.
Yeah, he'll name all 11 players now and it won't matter a toss. But
So Gary, we'll start with you. We'll start with Arsenal.
Okay. Jens Lehmann.
Wrong.
Oh, that's not a great start. No.
It's just in that awkward period before they were, you know, they were really good, but they were, you know, they had the really famous team and
yeah, it is. It's literally the transition. It's the Arsenal transition team.
Yeah. Do I have to go defenders or can I move up front?
You've 11 guesses so you can guess 11 players.
Thierry Henry,
yes.
Patrick Vieira.
Yes.
Surprise.
Gilberto Silva.
Wrong.
Oh no.
Robert Pires.
Yes.
Jose Antonio Reyes.
Wrong.
I'm having a mare.
He came off the bench but didn't start.
I'm having an absolute mare.
So you've got 6 guesses so far and you've got 3.
I don't know, it was like some of the old guards still around then. Lauren.
Right. 4 you've gotten right now.
Petit. Oh.
Emmanuel Petit.
He's gone about five years.
He was literally gone about 5 years. 6 years even.
I don't know this Arsenal team.
Bergkamp, yes.
Did you mean Petit, the Portuguese lad that was playing around that time?
No, and
not Emmanuel Petit.
I meant Emmanuel.
9 guesses so far and you've gotten 5 right.
Okay.
We give him 13 guesses.
Fuck. No way.
I'm struggling with the defence. And the other position.
Yeah, you have.
I'm struggling. Full stop.
See, there's a couple I don't...
You're missing the goalkeeper, the 2 centre-backs, the left-back, the right midfielder, and the other central midfielder.
Manuel Almunia.
Yeah!
I didn't know whether to say him or David Seaman. I think David Seaman was gone.
Well, you got 2 guesses left?
Got 2 guesses left. You've gotten 6 so far. Which isn't bad. You're doing nearly better than Sean did last week with the Chelsea team.
That's true. Martin Keown.
No.
Are you for real?
I don't know the defence. I'm completely blanking on the defence. Colo Torre.
No. Oh, they're all your chances, aren't they? That's right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wrong.
Can I have a go at
and you've gotten
the missing
6 right. Yeah, you can go with the missing.
Ashley Cole was the left back.
Ashley Cole was the left back.
And Sol Campbell.
Pascal Segan was here.
Pascal Segan.
Right mid. Jeez, that's a difficult one. Freddie Ljungberg.
Yeah, it was Freddie Ljungberg.
Was there anybody else missing?
One more central midfielder.
Fabregas.
Nope.
Oh. Ooh. Not Gilberto Silva.
He's big in business. Big businessman.
Pleb.
No, not Pleb. Pleb. Why was Pleb a businessman?
A businessman.
A business.
He's not a businessman. He's a businessman.
Yeah.
Let him handle his business. Damn. Jesus, I don't know. Yeah, come on.
Flamini.
I have a feeling
I might lose.
6 to beat, Sean.
Right, so in goal, Roy Carroll.
Roy Carroll, yes.
Oh,
call it off now. Right? If he's getting Roy Carroll.
Wait, sorry, it's between Roy Carroll or Tim Howard. And Tim Howard didn't play that season, I don't think. I think he was...
And it's the most famous dressing or tunnel bust up in the history of football. And Roy Carroll is standing right behind Roy Keane for the entire thing. As is Manuel Almunia.
So I like how you just keep on saying Roy Keane. So I got to say Roy Keane. Gary Neville.
Gary Neville, yes.
Because I remember, because obviously he was going at Neville first. Vieira was going at Neville first. John O'Shea?
Yes. No, sorry, John O'Shea didn't start.
No. Ha. Come on, three. Rio Ferdinand.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to come back in the game, Gary.
Would you bleed stop? Let me win at least.
No, this was already planned anyway.
Rio.
Yep.
So what we four. Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Nope.
Oh, Jesus.
Pressure's on.
Wayne Rooney.
One time, the most you can get now is nine. Wayne Rooney, yes.
Ryan Giggs.
Yes.
Paul Scholes.
Yes.
See, there's too many all reliables in that Man United. Yeah. Know,
so who am I missing?
I'm missing centre-back, left-back, and the other central midfielder.
Centre-half,
how many guesses does he have left?
He has...
I missed two, so I've got two wrong, haven't I?
Yeah.
So how many have I got left
now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You've got eight so far. Oh, you've only got one more guess.
I've only got one more guess.
Better, what have you even bet?
Oh, yeah, Jesus, that's grand.
He can come back in the game.
Ah, for fuck's sake. There's
six more points on offer.
Ah, Jesus. Centre half. He was playing centre half for United then.
Going to have to push you, Sean. You've been stalling now for a long time.
Yeah, I'm going to go Gabriel Heinze.
Gabriel Heinze, yes.
I had to go first as well, which I had no time to think. I'm just throwing that out there.
I'm giving you 10 seconds to come up with a centre midfielder and a centre back.
He had his guesses.
I already had. I had all of them.
So the two you missed were Mikael Silvestre and Darren Fletcher.
Mikael Silvestre.
Silvestre, sorry. Excuse me. I thought it. Right, Gary.
Okay.
The clock now goes back, or the baton goes back to you. Because actually, when I say there are six more points on offer. You're currently losing 6-9, so you're 3 points behind. So you can pull it all back. All you have to tell me is this is like, once you get it wrong, it goes back to Sean.
Okay.
You have to tell me the goal scorers in order. So who scored the...
Jesus, I haven't a notion. What was the score in that game?
4-2.
4-2.
Arsenal scored... I'm going to tell you every time. It's okay. United. Arsenal scored the first goal after 9 minutes. Who scored it?
Henry.
Wrong answer. Goes to Sean. For the steal.
Bergkamp.
Wrong answer. The answer was Patrick Vieira. Back to Sean. You get to go this time first.
Okay.
United scored the equaliser after 19 minutes. Who scored it?
Ronaldo.
Wrong answer. Gary.
Rooney.
Wrong answer.
Was it Ryan Giggs?
It was Ryan Giggs.
I was going to say Ryan Giggs.
Arsenal went back 2-1 up in the 35th minute. Who scored the goal?
Thierry Henry.
Wrong answer. Sean.
Freddie Ljungberg.
Wrong answer. It's Dennis Bergkamp.
This is great crack.
This is just guesswork.
United equalised after 55 minutes. Who scored the goal, Sean?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
Yes.
Sean was on to 10 points.
You get to
keep the baton. The baton of question answering.
I bet.
They went ahead 3-2 in the 58 minutes, 3 minutes later. Who got the goal?
Wayne Rooney.
Wrong answer. Gary?
Paul Scholes.
Wrong answer. It was Cristiano Ronaldo again. Come on, lads. Finally, in the 88th minute, Manchester United scored their fourth goal to win 4-2. Who got the goal, Gary?
Wayne Rooney.
That's a disgrace. Wrong answer. Sean.
Oh, you know the one.
You know.
Well, wherever Aaron Connolly got his dinking ability, it came from John O'Shea.
John O'Shea with the fourth goal.
I remember that goal. I don't remember that goal clearly
because you never guessed John O'Shea.
I don't remember.
I would have just said it.
I remember the goal, obviously, but not as much as I remember the sheer look of confusion and how perplexed John O'Shea was to have scored such a worldly of a goal.
Yeah, I remember that goal, but the only thing I remember from that game is the tunnel bust up and the goal. So it helped me whatsoever.
I remember Ronaldo came like rushing in for one of his goals and he ended up like so far in the north bank, like he was basically in
the Emirates, like, and they were in Highbury. Like, that's how firing the goal he was.
It was a brilliant, brilliant game. It was one of them games that the bust up adds to it. The actual quality of the game was great. The fact John O'Shea lobs the keeper at the very end and just stands like, it was like confused Eric Cantona is the only way he described that celebration. And also the fact that it was midweek, which, as we've got a piece up on site from ages ago, an editorial piece about how midweek games in the Premier League are automatically start 70% better than games
under the lights.
Under the lights.
And also you've got no guilt about watching the game when you're sitting in and you should be doing something else, like you would be on a Saturday afternoon, or like Monday night football as well coming up next Monday is going to be another perfect one for it. So on that note, we're all I'm excited for this game now. I can't wait. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next Monday to talk about that. Well, to build up, I suppose maybe we'll come back on Tuesday next week rather than Monday, after Monday night football.
Oh jeez, that's a good idea.
There's an idea. We'll do that next. So we'll be back next Tuesday after the game. There we go, live production meeting on air. If you've not subscribed to the podcast yet, please do. You can find us by searching Balls.ie Podcasts on all good podcast apps. You'll also find we've got a plethora of rugby podcasts up there this week. We talk to Brent Pope every Wednesday. We're talking to Stephen Ferris on the Build Up podcast this Wednesday as well, obviously reacting to that Ireland Scotland game and building up to the rest of the World Cup. So make sure to check those out during the week, but until next Tuesday, mind yourself.
You got the job on a technicality of a legend who recommended you. You are nothing, you are a fool, and you are a waste of time. Good night.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something, he went down in my estimation when he said that.
I don't believe personal insults help it.
And Jack Charlton is quite right to be indignant about that, and the gentleman in the yellow hat really exists nowhere in the firmament of international football.
The 10-man board of the FAI, the clowns, and now going to put the names in a hat. They're going to pick people who they've read about in newspapers.
Give it a blam and flash it into the net. What a goal that was.
And of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.